ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये। It's a verse offering obeisances to Narayan Rishi, which is actually the place that Lord Krishna, when he was leaving the planet, asked Uddhava to go, because there were many great sages there who were worshipping Narayan Rishi, and they hadn't heard the message of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Krishna asked Uddhava to go there. That's one of the reasons that he couldn't stay and instruct Vidura. And offer respectful obeisances to Narayan Rishi. Narayanam namaskritya nanam chaiva narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam, and the goddess of learning, Sarasvati. Tato jayam udirayat. And then this Bhagavatam, tato jayam udirayat, means it's our very means of conquest. So someone may wonder, what is the fundamental practice through which one can cross over the ocean of difficulties, this material world? And here it is, by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees. So today's verse is the first canto, and it's the fifth chapter. And this is entitled Narada's Instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam, and it's one of the most important chapters in understanding the scheme of the Srimad Bhagavatam and how this conversation got started in the first place. And we have a discussion between Narada Muni and Srila Vyasadeva. So Srila Vyasadeva in this chapter is lamenting. He doesn't feel quite satisfied. And he's been performing his service quite diligently. And in that moment of need, his spiritual master Narada Muni appears. And the discussion begins because Srila Vyasadeva is trying to ascertain why he doesn't feel satisfied. So Narada Muni is beginning the discussion very expertly to give Srila Vyasadeva direction on how to improve his service. So we're on the fifth verse today. I'll read the English leading up to the fifth verse. First verse says, Suta Goswami said, thus the sage amongst the gods, Narada, comfortably seated and apparently smiling, addressed the Rishi amongst the Brahmanas, Vedavyas. Addressing Vyasadeva, the son of Parashara, Narada inquired, are you satisfied by identifying with the body or the mind as objects of self-realization? Your inquiries were full and your studies were also well fulfilled. And there's no doubt that you have prepared a great and wonderful work, the Mahabharata, which is full of all kinds of Vedic sequences elaborately explained. You have fully delineated the subject of impersonal Brahman as well as the knowledge derived therefrom. Why should you be despondent in spite of all this, thinking that you are undone, my dear Prabhu? I'm going to move up. It's roasting right behind me. And I'll read the English first, but then we'll go back and study the Sanskrit a little bit. Sri Vyasadeva said, verse number 5, all you have said about me is perfectly correct. Despite all this, I'm not pacified. I therefore question you about the root cause of my dissatisfaction, for you are a man of unlimited knowledge, due to your being the offspring of one Brahma, who is self-born without mundane father and mother. I'll do the word for word. Vyasa.
Vyasa.
Vyas.
Vyas.
So Vyasa is a title. It means the one who divides or edits. So Vyasadeva is a title of the one who does the work of separating out the Vedas in ways, especially as it's described in this first canto, that people of the world can assimilate it and be able to take advantage of the knowledge. Uvacha said. Asti, there is. Eva, certainly. Me, mine. Sarvam, all. Idam, this. Toya, by you. Uktam, uttered. Tatapi, and yet. Na, not. Atma, self. Parituṣyate, does not pacify. Excuse me. Does pacify. May, unto me. Tat, of which. Mulam, root. Avyaktam, undetected. Gadhapodham, the man of unlimited knowledge. Prachamahe, do inquire. Twa, unto you. Atma bhava, self-born. Atma bhutam, offspring. Vyasuvacha, asyeva me sarvam idam twayoktam. Tatapi natma parichushyate me. Tanmulam avyaktam agadapodam. Prachamahe tvatma bhavatma bhutam. Word for word again. Vyasaha. Vyasa. Uvacha. Said. Asti. There is. Eva. Certainly. Me. Mine, sarvam, all, idam, this, tvaya, by you, uktam, uttered, tatapi, and yet, na, not, atma, self, parituṣyate, does pacify, me, unto me, tat, of which, mulam, root, avyaktam, undetected, agadabodham, the man of unlimited knowledge, prachamahe, do inquire, twa, unto you, atmabhava, self-born, atmabhutam, offspring. Translation. Sri Vyasadeva said, all you have said about me is perfectly correct. Despite all this, I'm not pacified. I therefore question you about the root cause of my dissatisfaction. For you are a man of unlimited knowledge due to your being the offspring of one Brahma who is self-born without mundane father and mother. Please repeat. Sri Vyasadeva said, all you have said about me is perfectly correct.
All you have said about me is perfectly correct.
Despite all this, I'm not pacified.
I therefore question you
about the root cause of my dissatisfaction.
For you are a man of unlimited knowledge.
Due to your being the offspring
of one Brahma
who is self-born, without mundane father and mother. Purport. In the material world, everyone is engrossed with the idea of identifying the body or the mind as the self. As such, all knowledge disseminated in the material world is related either with the body or with the mind. And that is the root cause of all despondencies. This is not always detected, even though one may be the greatest erudite scholar in materialistic knowledge. It is good, therefore, to approach a personality like Narada to solve the root cause of all despondencies. Why Narada should be approached is explained below.
Vyasuvachasteva me sarvividam tvayoktam tatapi natma parichushyate me tanmulam avyaktam agadabhodam prichyamihetvatma bhavatma bhutam.
Shivyasadeva said, "All you have said about me is perfectly correct. Despite all this, I'm not pacified. I therefore question you about the root cause of my dissatisfaction, for you are a man of unlimited knowledge due to your being the offspring of one Brahma, who is self-born without mundane father and mother." We thank Govinda for the expert distribution of knowledge this morning. Sir? Thank you. And this conversation is important because it's between two self-realized souls. Of course, Srila Vyasadeva is known as the literary incarnation of God, and Narada Muni is known as the incarnation of the Lord's Bhakti Shakti. So when they have the conversation, as is mentioned throughout the Bhagavatam, when two great souls come together for such a conversation, it's important to be there to listen. And the benefit we get from Srimad Bhagavatam is we're actually able to be there and listen. This is the power of the revealed scripture, that we can hear from the great souls and hear the conversations between them. It's a place that you definitely want to eavesdrop and find out what they're thinking and saying. So in this section of the Bhagavatam, we're finding that the dissatisfaction of Srila Vyasadeva leads to a breakthrough that invokes Narada Muni's instructions about the Srimad Bhagavatam, and very specifically how to solve the problems of life. And so we find normally in our lives that we come across frustrating circumstances. Do we not?
Yeah.
I don't know if we even come across them. It's more like we're amongst them at all times.
Right, right.
It's not that they ever stop. And Srila Prabhupada writes in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that frustration is the door to enlightenment, because if we were categorically the same as matter, then we wouldn't even notice it. But because we're of a different nature, or a different category of energy altogether, it's very difficult for us to relate to matter. And it's always frustrating to us. So Prabhupada points out in the second canto of the Bhagavatam that this is a sign that we don't belong to this category of energy, that we're something else. And as it turns out, we're an energy that's superior to matter. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that there are different categories of matter. First, in the seventh chapter of the Gita, he says, "Bhumir apo analovayu kamano buddhirevacha ahankara itimi bina prakritirashtada." Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego, altogether these are my separated material energies. Then he says, "Apareya mitasvanyam prakritim vidimiparam jiva bhutam mahabaho yayedam darite jagat." Besides these, there's a superior energy of mine, which are the living entities. They're part of the internal energy. It's a superior energy. And he said it's by their interaction with the lower energy, the material energy, that the universe is being maintained. It's how the body's animated and so forth. Then later on, in this 13th chapter of the Gita, Krishna describes how the soul and the body are two different categories of energy. And he tells about the learned person. He says, Kshetra gnyam chapi vam viti sarva kshetri shubharata kshetra kshetra gnyo gyanam yatash gyanam matam mama. This is knowledge, he says. It is to understand the difference between the kshetra and the kshetragya. Kshetragya means one who knows the field, and the body is called the field. So there's a difference between the two. And then he goes on to say that there's a super knower who's there within all bodies. I'm there as an individual soul located in this body, and then Krishna, as the Paramatma, is situated in all bodies. He knows all living entities. As he says in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjuna bhavishani cha bhutani mamtu vedana kashtana. He said, I know everything. I know everyone. And this is true. And knowing these different categories of energies is extremely important. In fact, the Bhagavatam begins in the 2nd chapter by saying, Suta Goswami says, Vedanti tat tat favidas tat fam yaj gyanamad vayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdyate. It is said that the learned know these three categories of energy. That is, that there is Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. And Vishnu Purana, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quotes when he's teaching Sanatana Goswami, and he says that there are Vishnu Shakti Paraprokta, Kshetra Gyakya Tatapara, Avidya Karma Samgyangya, Tritya Shakti Ishate, Tritya. Three kinds of energies he describes. And that is the material energy, which is sometimes known as the dull, separated energy. And then there's the living entity who's in between the material and spiritual energies, and then of course there's the spiritual energy. And it's important to know these categories of energies. One who knows what the categories of energy are and knows what their characteristics are and how to interact with them appropriately, then doesn't become entangled in the world. There are other kinds of energies or nuances to these various energies that Krishna goes into describing in the Bhagavad Gita. For instance, in the 14th chapter of the Gita, Krishna talks about how the material energy is made up of three modalities, goodness, passion, and ignorance, and how they're always interacting and what their characteristics are and so forth. And if one doesn't know about these and mistakenly thinks that I'm the body and goes on trying to enjoy matter, one will be disappointed, to say the least. We'll be subjected to great misery because we don't belong here. Then above this are the transcendentalists, besides the materialists, who simply accept matter as the all in all and assume that I'm the same as matter and try to make do somehow or other. There are transcendentalists who try to transcend matter. However, even they, when they are lacking the nuance of knowledge about the categories of spiritual energy, as I mentioned before, Vedanti tat tat favidas, the knowers of the truth know that there's a Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan. Brahman is the all-pervading effulgence of the Supreme Personality of God. And Paramatma is the localized aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead who appears to assist the living entity in his desire to enjoy the material world. As mentioned also in more detail in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Asau Gunamayar Bhavir, Bhuta Sukshmendriyatma Biswa Nirmiteshu Nirvishto Bhunte Bhuteshu Tadgunan. This Paramatma comes to assist the living entity by fulfilling all of his desires. And he accompanies the soul through all the different species of life in the material world. And then there's Bhagavan, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if one is a transcendentalist, we find out later in this chapter, and doesn't know Bhagavan, and doesn't give one's attention to Bhagavan, who is the root of the Paramatma and the Brahman, then one will fall short in one's spiritual practice. Naishkarmyam apyachuta bhava varjitam na shobate jnanam alam niranjanam kutak pudash chashvara bhadramishvare na charpitam karma yadapyakaranam. This Narada Muni is instructing Vyasadeva in this chapter that even if one comes to understand that I'm not this material body, I'm spiritual, different from the category of energy that is surrounding me. But that person doesn't develop an attachment, a feeling for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, also known as Achyuta, doesn't have Achyuta Bhava. Naishkarmyam apyachyuta bhava varjitam. Nishobate, it's not very nice. It's not beautiful. It's not what we're looking for. Nishobate jnanam alam niranjanam. Then he says, what to speak of people who go on trying to enjoy the material world? The charpitam karma yadapyakaranam. That this only results in karma and repeated suffering in the material world. So this is fairly clear, that there are various categories of energy. We're in a category of energy that is eternal, but we're also eternally servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the root cause of our dissatisfaction is forgetting about our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's what's being pointed out here. The question that Vyasadeva is asking is very helpful, because first of all, it shows that he's, and we know from the preamble to this verse today, that he's investigated all kinds of self-realization. And not only has he investigated, he's written about it. And this comes in the Mahabharata and other Puranas. And now he's dissatisfied. And this is the result of not coming to the point of Krishna consciousness, practice of Krishna consciousness. So now he's asking his guru, why am I dissatisfied? What's the root cause of this dissatisfaction? And so Narada Muni is going to give the answer in this chapter, that you haven't focused your attention, or rather he's addressing Vyasadeva, whose responsibility it is to teach spiritual principles to the world. You haven't directed the people's attention in the world to Krishna Katha, specific knowledge about the personality of Godhead and our relationship with Him. That's what will solve the problem that you have, which is dissatisfaction. So this is good to know, that because I'm not focused enough on the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I'm not hearing about them and entering into them, therefore I feel various degrees of dissatisfaction. And it's also, to me, always encouraging to see that a person on the level of that Srila Vyasadeva is on also feels dissatisfaction from not getting this. So what to speak of, then one could use that phrase, what to speak of me or others in the world who have no idea about spiritual life. So this is the way that we can feel satisfied and come to perfect alignment in life, and that is by remembering our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and hearing about Him. That will solve the problem. So now we'll just take some reflections or any questions so we can go more deeply within the verse. Anything that you heard so far from the verse or from the monologue that stuck in your mind, we can start with reflections. Krishna's Kaviraj Prabhu.
Thank you very much. I was thinking about the how you said that this is the beginning, and this verse is Vyasadeva sort of giving Narada Muni the impetus to then speak of the rest of this chapter and onwards, and give those instructions to him. So it's sort of the opening of the door for transcendental knowledge.
Yeah, it's a big moment in the Bhagavatam and in our lives to hear this question. Why am I dissatisfied? Everyone wants to know that. And they go on ignoring the fact that there's a deeper answer. So tanmulam avyaktam agadabhotam. In this verse, it's the tanmulam. What's the root cause? One must look for the root in order to solve the problem. As any gardener knows, if you pull up the top of the plant, later on it'll grow back. So we have to come to that root cause. This is something that it's necessary to come to that understanding. Where should we give our energy? Because there are many activities that we can perform in this life, and they seem like they should be successful. For instance, one may work very hard to earn money, to stay independent and protect oneself. But later on in the chapter, Narada Muni says, really, this is kind of a waste of time, working really hard to maintain yourself. And he says why. It's very logical also. Tasyaiva heto prayate tukobito na labhyate yad brahmatamu pariyata ta labhyate dukavaranyata sukham kalena sarvatra gabhira ramhasa. He says that you're going to get what you get anyway. So why are you working so hard? And the reason he gives is because we're allotted a certain amount of happiness and a certain amount of distress due to our previous activities. Just like if you're in a financial situation now, right? Anyone? I mean, I didn't mean that in a negative way, but when you say it, everyone's in some financial situation because the society we live in demands that we have some funds in order to live and so forth. But why are we in the situation we're in now? Can anyone say? Financially. It's a simple answer. Because of what we've done before. I mean, basically, you know, you might have if you look at your ledger and look at your spreadsheet, you have what you have because of what you've done before. You know, I know people who have taken out very gleefully, taking credit cards, and then spent on them. And then they find themselves in a situation where they owe money, to put it simply. And they owe a lot. In fact, there's a lot of people that are in credit card debt. And it's really difficult for them to get out of it. There are financial counselors that help people get out of this debt, because what happens to people is they get in this cycle of debt, and they can't pay it off, and they're also paying high interest rates on their credit cards. And so they can never catch up quite. And so similarly, everyone who lives in the material world is spending. by enjoying. It's not our stuff. We don't own anything, and if you use it, you got to pay for it. Have you ever checked into a hotel or a motel, and they have what's called a little mini bar? Not a little mini bar, if that's redundant. It's a mini bar. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah.
They have things like potato chips, cookies, alcohol, nuts, Coca-Cola, all the stuff you got to have. And if you take it, you know, you might be like really hungry and you think, oh, I got to have this. And you'll take it. Someone will take something from the mini bar. Later, you know, it's not free. They come in later and they'll look and they see how many bags of potato chips, how many Coca-Colas did this person take? And, you know, you look at the bill, it's expensive. It costs a lot. When you're eating it, you think like, oh, what the heck, you know, I'm hungry, I got to have this. But that's the material world. It's like a big mini bar, a big mini bar. And whatever you take, it's not free. And so this is called karma. And so you have to pay for it later. And you think, I'm enjoying now, but later it comes. Tasyaiva heto priyate ta kovido. Narada Muni says, this strategy of not caring about the ledger and just going on enjoying in the material world, or working very hard to catch up, either way, try to pay off the whole debt, is this just won't work. First of all, there's too much debt. And second of all, this path of enjoying the material world, it digs us into a deeper hole. So, tasyaiva heto prayateta kovido na labhyate yad brahmatam uparyada. And also, no matter what we do, even if we're perfect citizens, we don't take at the minibar, you'll get charged for something else. There's a basic cover charge just to live in the material world as it is, that is very difficult to pay back. And so the other thing is, it's as if, you know, we stopped at, you know, a million different hotels and we took from so many mini bars that we don't know how much we owe. I mean, Krishna knows and the material energy knows, but we have no way of knowing it. We have no way of catching up with the debt. You pay off some of it and others will come and claim, no, he came through Cleveland, Ohio. He stopped in three places and there's a record of it in the material nature. That's why in the Gita, Krishna offers us a plan, financial plan. He says, sarva dharman parityaja, mame kam sharanam braja. It's like, you'll never figure out how many hotels you stayed at, how many mini bars you raided, and you owe for that. And look, you'll never get out of it, so I'll take care of it. I'll cover the tab. But you surrender to me. And just take shelter of me. He's really, Krishna's so kind. He's offering, just come to me, I'll take care of it. Stop all this nonsense. That's what he's saying. Sarva dharman parityaja. Give up all the nonsense. Stop wandering around doing stupid stuff. And just come to me and be sober and enjoy life in devotional service. Then, you know, I can take care of this if you stop horsing around. So don't horse around and take shelter and I'll take care of your debt. So Narada says, tasyaiva heto prayate ta kovido na labhyate tad brahmatam utari. A learned person, a person who becomes kavi, knows this. This is real knowledge. And therefore, he tries for a spiritual advancement, because there you can actually become exalted and you can really make some progress if you try for spiritual advancement. The material endeavors that we have are, it's the Shastra suggests that you do just what you have to do. Don't get more entangled than you have to. Don't really lean into it. Don't put your whole heart into your material existence. Just be inventive and find out a way somehow or other to get by in material life. So you can survive, take care of your family, but then use the balance of your energy to practice Krishna consciousness. And Narada Muni goes on to say that if you do that, you'll never lose.
Tyaktva sudharmam charanam bhujam harer bhajana pakvota patetato yadi yatra kva babhadram abhuda mushikim ko varta apto bhajatam adharmata. No, I blew that last line. Tyaktva sudharmam charanam bhujam harer bhajana pakvota patetato yadi yatra kva babhadram abhuda mushikim ko varta apto bhajatam. So last word. Bhajatam adharmata. So he says, if you give up trying to perfect your material existence, or just working hard to pay off the debt that you owe in the material world, you have a material occupation, and let's say that you take a risk to take the devotional service by not putting your full attention into that process of trying to perfect your material life. He said, even if you fail, you're better off because you tried spiritual life. Then if you leaned into your material life and you were successful and you didn't take that risk for spiritual life. So that's how important it is, Narada Muni's bringing out. And so he enumerates on the root cause. What is the root cause? And then he gives a lot of logical reasons why we should focus our attention on Krishna Katha and the practice of devotional service. A couple more reflections.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I just had a reflection and a comment about that reflection, and then two questions. So the first reflection is about what you said at the beginning of class, which is that as living entities, we get despondent or we get depressed because we're not identifying ourselves with matter, and we're not part of this matter, we're a higher energy. So I found that very interesting, as you said in the class. So the question I have is, because we are not part of this material energy, or this pure energy, does that mean that we know that we're originally part and parcel of the Supreme Lord? Does that allow us then to be able to make it easier for us to preach to other people that, you know, because we're part and parcel, you're not part of this material energy, you're Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema? Is that aligned with that initial statement that we're not part of this material energy? That's my first question. That because we're Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema, we all have this Krishna consciousness somewhere deep inside our hearts, somewhere embedded deep inside, like many, many lifetimes has been covered with dust. Is there any connection with that statement initially in the Bhagavatam? And my second question is,
well, wait, let me answer the first one because I'll get confused. I'm already confused, but I'll get more confused. Yes, the potential is always there. Otherwise, why would we try? We don't preach to dead stones, because a dead stone won't respond. But miraculously, the living entity, especially in human form, or almost exclusively in human form, unless you're Lord Chaitanya, is capable of responding to a benevolent presentation of Krishna consciousness, because they have that, they always have that potential eternally. And it's the preoccupation of the Vaishnavas to think how to revive that original consciousness of the living entity. And we also know that the living entities are very susceptible to their environment and what they're told. And really, they're very trusting in a lot of ways. I was thinking about how we trust, I mean, somebody hands us, like I was on the airplane, they were going around handing out things, and people just take it and eat it. I mean, I didn't eat it, because I didn't trust. We brought our own stuff. But still, it's kind of natural. Everyone just trusts what they get. And they also, when they hear something, living entities, they're very susceptible to what they hear. That's why all over the airports and everywhere else in Toronto, there's big signs up telling little Jiva what to do. It's like, take this, eat that, go here, buy this. Because little Jiva, you know, is kind of susceptible, can look here and there and find it. So the Vaishnavas know this. And that amidst this chatter that's there in the material world, telling the living entity, take all kinds of things that aren't good for you, the one voice that's really important is trying to coax little Jiva into taking Krishna Katha and Krishna Prasadam. And so the devotees do that, and they try to find out ways in which they can accommodate the living entities, because it's not such an easy thing. It's not that if you just broadcast the holy name, then automatically people will be able to find their way back to Godhead. In fact, we see that it takes a Herculean effort to bring one person back to spiritual life, just to come to the platform of nishtha, of being steady in their devotional practice. We require a network, and we require a set program. I mean, we have these communities, really. Prabhupada knew this. He knew, yes, we have to distribute knowledge, mass distribution of knowledge. We have to go out and teach people the process of Krishna consciousness through the transcendental literatures we have, and also through the chanting and so forth. But they also have to have a group they can come and be part of, because yes, we have that dormant Krishna consciousness within us and it can be awakened, but we also have to contend with our material life. That's a big contention. We have obligations to fulfill. And if you have any obligations today, even anything you got to do, what to speak of for the rest of your life. I mean, there's all the time in our minds we have this juggling process going on. How am I going to deal with this? How am I going to deal with that? And it's very pressing, and people are extremely pressed, and therefore there has to be a comprehensive means to help people come to Krishna consciousness and then be able to assimilate it according to their position in life. And they need unlimited support in order for that potential to be fully manifest. And so if we're to show full compassion to the world, we have to develop fully systems in which not only we ourselves, we have to do it ourselves, can develop in Krishna consciousness, but we also, to effectively spread Krishna consciousness all over Toronto, we also have to have a very comprehensive way of helping people balance their lives while taking to Krishna consciousness. So the answer is yes, it is extremely important that the living entity has the potential to become Krishna conscious, and we know that, but we also have to have a comprehensive way in order to make it fully manifest in them and in ourselves. And the second question?
Thank you very much. The second question is, you know that Vyasadeva is the living incarnation of Krishna. So was it the desire of Krishna to put him into that state of despondency, that since he's Krishna himself, that he's a living incarnation, why would he feel despondent? Was it because for our benefit that he would then write the Bhagavatam after writing all these scriptures, Mahabharata, Purana, etc., but still do it for our benefit? Was that the reason why he did that?
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else? Yes, Prabhu. He finds it that very amazing that Vyasadev
actually asked this question.
Yeah, that's a good point, Prabhu. And it also indicates how important it is for us to be vulnerable and to let ourselves, to expose our weaknesses in Krishna consciousness. one of the causes of not advancing in devotional service is a lack of revealing our own shortcomings or having a place to reveal them. Oftentimes devotees will advance in Krishna consciousness and they get caught in a kind of trap. The trap is that, this is mentioned by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in the Madhuri Kadambini, that when devotees advance, then people come to them and they say, oh, look what you're doing. It's very nice. You're advanced now. So then the devotee can be caught in a conundrum, because anybody in the material world, even if they're very advanced in Krishna consciousness, is susceptible to anartas. They come from all over the place. In fact, the Shastra says again and again that like Supada Mulam Bhajata Priyasya Tyaktanya Bhavasya Hare Priyasaha, that Vikarma or anartas, they can bubble up from anywhere. Who knows where they come from? They just previous lives and so forth. And we're susceptible to that all the way up until the time that we're able to see Krishna face to face and we develop pure love of Krishna. So therefore, while we're doing our practice of devotional service, it's important to have people that we can confide in and let them know of what our shortcomings are, so that they can help us process it. So as I was saying, there's a way in which someone may become advanced in devotional service. They're genuinely advanced. But then, people begin to revere them and say, oh, you're so advanced. So now the person may have a conundrum that, okay, I have this anarta that just arose. So I don't want to reveal it to anybody, because then they may become disappointed and think, oh, you're not actually as advanced as I thought. This is something people, someone might think. And or they may become attached to being an advanced devotee or being seen as an advanced devotee and therefore not want to reveal it. Whatever the cause, holding on to it without processing it is very dangerous, because then suddenly they can just fall away and everyone say, oh, they weren't very advanced. That may not be true. They may have been advanced, but they weren't able to process the anarta that came up. So it's important to be able to reveal one's mind very clearly to a spiritual master, so that that person can help us process it. And what I find is those who are vulnerable, who actually are strong enough to reveal their faults, not in a falsely, humble way, that like, no, I'm so fallen, I'm the worst, and all that kind of stuff, but genuinely bring out the real anarta and expose it somewhere. Not that you have to do that here, there, and everywhere, or an open assembly, but at least you have guhyam akyati prichati, you have some place, private guhyam, where you can reveal what's guhyam in your heart to others. And this is a scene, as I said in the very beginning, we're privy to because of the revealed scripture. Here's Srila Vyasadeva, and he could just say, hey, I'm an incarnation of God, I'm not going to tell anybody that I'm feeling frustrated. But he did, and it's a relief to us, because everyone who reads this chapter goes, well, Vyasadeva's frustrated, I'm frustrated, so yeah, I can relate to that, being frustrated. But what do you do with it? You have to bring it to somebody who can help you, has a higher perspective, won't exploit you because you reveal your shortcoming, and that is advanced enough to help you process it properly. Then you could really make advancement in devotional service, to be able to open your heart and take those things out. Because anartas like to hide in the dark. And my unnatural attachment to matter has been going on since a time immemorial. That means before we can remember. And therefore, it's natural that there will be these very deep anartas that are there. And one thing is, they're so deep because ultimately, the only way that we can really process them is to fully surrender to Krishna. We have to come to a point of frustration where we say, okay, I completely give up. Not like I give up partway, but I'm going to keep some of them, to enjoy later, these anartas. But completely give up. Then there's nothing that can stop us. in advancing devotional service. If we admit what we have, where our frustrations are coming from, our material attachments and so forth, and reveal them and bring them out to the light of day and be able to discuss them, then we can advance. That's really what Ishtagoshti is for, the devotees to assemble and have a safe environment in which they can discuss these things and not feel that they are going to be exploited because of it, or unnecessarily criticized or berated for revealing themselves. And in that kind of assembly, devotees develop a firm faith. We have time for a couple more. Yes. One, two.
Thanks for taking my question. We see that Vyasadeva was segregated Vedas and did a great job, and finally he got disappointed. So what is the purpose of Vedas?
Well, the Vedas are a big project. They're meant to give opportunity to all living entities to, you know, come to a higher level of, to come to the perfection of life. And they are all-encompassing. So the Vedas begin with giving instruction through which we can become elevated. There are certain parts of the Vedas that are really about dealing with the material world. Most of them are. Krishna says this in the Gita, Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nistrigunya Vabarjana. He says that the Vedas mainly deal with the three modes of material nature and how to negotiate them. Now, if one takes to that, it's not a complete loss, because the tendency of the jiva is to want to, in the material world, is to be independent from God. So if you accept the Vedas, even if it's for material elevation, then you actually become dear to the Lord and you make advancement. This is mentioned in the Nectar of Instruction, karmihi pya parito hare pritaya vyaktim yayur jnaninas, that the karmis, Prabhupada mentioned, the karmis are mentioned in this list of people who are dear to Krishna. The karmis, those who deal with karmakanda in the Vedas, are dear to Krishna because they're following the Vedas, which are manifest from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, they're co-eternal with the Lord. And when somebody follows them, then they can come to the stage, after regulated sense gratification, of coming to say, you know, is there anything more than this? And that's the Upanishadic part of the Vedas. And in there, you're analyzing what's the difference between myself and the material world. And the big questions arise there, about like, who am I? And what's my real goal in life? And then, of course, from the Upanishads, we have the Vedanta Sutra, which is kind of summarizes what's all there in the Upanishads. And then the commentary. From there, as we'll see in this first canto of the Bhagavatam, Srila Vyasadeva had given the Puranas, which are a part of the Vedas. There's a misunderstanding some people have, the Shruti and Smriti, and that the Shruti is more important, or is the only thing that's important. Smriti is not important at all, but actually it's the other way around. Especially in the age of Kali Yuga, the Smriti explains what's in the Vedas, and there's no difference between the Shruti and the Smriti ultimately. Jiva Goswami in the Tattvasandarbha gives the example of a golden bangle, and if you're going to complete the bangle, it's not a full circle. The only way you can complete it is using gold. So the Smriti completes the Vedas, and it's of the same quality. Otherwise, it wouldn't make a complete circle. So after Vyasadeva had compiled the Puranas, it's mentioned here, the Itihasas like the Mahabharata and the various Puranas, he still wasn't satisfied. He even had the Bhagavat Purana, but he still wasn't satisfied. And this is when Narada's coming and say, be more specific. You really have to tell about Krishna and our relationship with him. And that's after this when he goes into trance, Vyasa's trance, and he's able to see the pastimes for himself. And then he comes back out and the Samadhi Bhasha, or speaking what he heard in Samadhi, gives us the Srimad Bhagavatam, which enumerates the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of God. Then he can become satisfied. So there's no division between the Vedas and the it's all a complete whole, and they all also exist eternally, all of them, even the Smriti. It's eternal knowledge.
Sometimes I get questions like, am I following the right process? It's like, faith crisis. In that case, also,
sometimes you get questions from people saying, am I following the right process? Which kind of people are these? Like people in devotional service, are you saying?
I get from myself, but sometimes I get the questions in my mind, okay, am I following the right thing?
Well, what are you following? What process are you following?
The Krishna consciousness.
Okay. I just want to make sure. Okay. Krishna consciousness. You're following Krishna consciousness process, but sometimes you get questions in your mind that say, am I following the right process?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yes?
Like in that case also, I have to reveal the things. Like you said, an advanced devotee to get something.
Oh, yes. I see. So maybe you have doubts and you have to reveal them.
Yeah.
Yes?
So what exactly I can do in this situation so that I don't leave the process?
So you don't leave the process?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, it's important to have doubts. Doubts are a part of the intelligence. This is mentioned by Kapiladev in his discussion of Sankhya, and he says that doubts are vital to spiritual advancement. You should have doubts. And he attributes that to the intellect. That's what the intellect does. It looks at things and says, you know, is this real or not? If you don't have a testing process, then how will you come to a siddhanta, or perfection of knowledge? Siddhanta means not just what something is, but it also means what it isn't. It's very precise. Siddhanta bolya chita na kara alash iha hoite Krishna lagi shudra manash. The Kaviraj Goswami says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that don't be lazy about trying to find Siddhanta. You should ask. You should inquire. Bhagavatam is full of questions. Parikshit Maharaj is constantly asking Shukadeva Goswami, what about this? What about that? Yeah, you said this, but what about that? So you shouldn't be shy. You have to be respectful and you have to come to the point of, but you have to ask questions and have doubts. And the process of advancing in devotional service really is finding a place, especially people or a person, who can remove your doubts. When you have that and you're able to put the doubts before the person in a safe environment and say, I have this doubt, I have that doubt, and the person then can remove the doubt, then you'll be able to advance in devotional service. So that's why Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that if you want to have knowledge, then you should approach somebody who has it and inquire from them, submissively render service, and what is the other thing? Render service. Be submissive, render service, and ask questions. Ask a lot of questions, and then they can remove your doubts. And this Kaviraj Goswami says, Sudrid Manash. If you're able to do this, then your mind will become very fixed in devotional service. And he says, that's how I came to this point. He said, I went through the process and I asked all the questions. Like, who's Lord Chaitanya? That's the point he's making. Is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu the Supreme Personality of Godhead? I know, you know, some devotees from South India, they're going, we never heard of Lord Chaitanya. We know Venkateshwar and, you know, who's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Well, you have to study it. That's why we have extensive literature. It's not some sentimental movement, but the science is there in the Bhagavatam and in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So it's really important to study the Shastras. Especially, you should read Bhagavad Gita very carefully and the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's very difficult. Well, let me put it in a positive way. If you regularly read Prabhupada's purports and study the Bhagavatam, all your doubts will be removed. And the reason is the Srimad Bhagavatam knows us. It's Krishna. He knows us. And we have a relationship with him. And the way we reestablish our relationship with him truly in this, as we're living in this world, is to study Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees. And Krishna, the Bhagavatam, knows all of the psychological hang-ups that we have, if I can use that word, in this world. And you'll notice, if you go through systematically and read Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll notice that the Bhagavatam addresses every one of the psychological conditions that we may have in this world. And all of the kind of conundrums and difficult choices that we have to make, and helps us to get over those. For instance, we have the story of Priyavrata in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He's in a tough situation. He wants to renounce the world. And then his father comes and says, no, you can't renounce. We need a temple president. And, you know, you got to do this. And he's like, no, no, no. And then finally Brahma comes and says, you know, GBC shows up, says, no, you really got to do this. And then they explain to him that, you know, there's a way to work in the world and not become attached to it. And, you know, he finally does it. And you see that Narada gives his blessings. He was the spiritual master of Priyavrata. Priyavrata takes to the process. Apparently he became attached even. But then he was able to give it up. So we see one scenario. And then we see one after another. Then there's this story of people who become so attached to a particular aspect of the material world. So we have Bharat Maharaj. This misplaced compassion. This is a really hard one because people say, well, still ask, you know, what about the deer? You know, what about that deer anyway? Shouldn't we have started a society? He should have at least called the Humane Society or something. I mean, you know, that's like, but the Bhagavatam goes deeply within it. And what to speak of, what's his name, who became attached to Urvashi? I just forget his name right now. He chased after Urvashi and became so attached. Pururava, you know, it's like any time I meet somebody who like, quote unquote, falls in love, you know, you'll meet, you know, I can't live without her. You know, it's like, okay, read these few chapters and see what you look like. You don't know what you look like right now. Just go ahead and look in the mirror. And you read Pururava, and Pururava's chasing out, Urva, I can't live without Urvashi, you know, and she's like, get out of here, you know. I don't want you. It's like, oh no, but I love you. And so these are real life situations. We can relate to these because number one, we're living entities, so we're kind of smart. We know actually a lot of things, especially when we get a little purified. We start to see the world as it is. Like in this chapter, Narada Muni tells about his coming to perfection in spiritual life. And he says, you know, I was born in a low family. And then he tells how the whole scenario of his life unfolded. And then he said, when I came to spiritual realization, I saw that I and the Lord are in the same category. We're both spiritual. I have nothing to do with the material world. He just realized it all. So we can do that. We're in the same category. It's just how to overcome all the myriad psychological hang-ups that we have and that attach us to matter. The Bhagavatam's the solvent, and you have to pour it in. You have to hear the Bhagavatam regularly, and you have to hear it a lot, too. And so that's what this is saying. This chapter is saying, if you're feeling dissatisfied, you're not hearing enough. It's not that devotional service doesn't work. It's not the wrong process. It's the right process. And you'll find that out too. If you study the Bhagavatam carefully in the Association of Devotees, 2 years ago, I mean, every year at Govardhan, we have this yajna that we do where we read 5 hours a day Bhagavatam. And I just, We just finished recently, actually. We read the whole 5th, 6th, and 7th cantos over the period of a month. But the year before, I'm thinking, we read the 3rd and 4th canto. And there's so many very direct, very precise teachings in those books. There was a brahmachari that was there listening. And Bhagavatam does such intimate or a very intricate surgery to remove all our misgivings. And all of our misgivings means I'm attached to the material world in all these various ways, very particular ways. The Bhagavatam knows what they are and therefore helps to take us out. So after listening to the third canto especially, very pointed discussions about the ways in which I become attached to the material world. And so Brahmachari listens to the whole Bhagavatam, third canto. He came to his guru, who was staying there at the ashram, and he goes, "What was I thinking?" Meaning about being in the material world in general for all these for all these lifetimes. That was his comment. It's like, "What was I thinking?" And this is the revelation one gets from revealed scripture, if you hear it. So Prabhupada used to tell us, these books aren't just for selling. You actually have to hear them and for long periods of time. And the more that you can lean into it, or at least have a regimen where every day you hear something, that if you can do that, then you'll find that your spiritual health will improve. We're advocating spiritual fitness. You have to become spiritually fit. You know, when you're trying to get physically fit, you know, it can be elusive, because people all the time, you know, they think, they go out and they buy a fitness video. And while they're eating their cornflakes in the morning, they're watching the fitness video, moving the spoon, and they think, yeah, I'm working out. And it's like, why am I so fat and, you know, out of breath and stuff like that? I got a fitness video. So you actually have to go and walk around the block at least. I mean, you got to do something. Otherwise, you're not going to get fit. And in spiritual life, too, yes, we have these books. All the information is there. But unless I apply it, and the more I apply it, and, you know, be a little brave. Tekva sudharmam shadadam bhujam. Narada's pushing us. Said, don't be afraid. Jump in there. Get in. and try it. Go deeper. Then, unless I try to go deeper, I'm not going to break through. And you know, you can hang around for a long time. We say these things like, if you maintain material attachments while chanting the holy name, what do we say? You can go chanting for millions of years and you still won't get the result. That's illegal. You don't do that, the Acharyas say. This is Niyamagraha. You're responsible for getting a result. Don't leave it on the process that, oh, I tried it, but it didn't work. It does work. You're just not applying it deeply enough. There was a book, and I have no idea what it's about. I think it was about women, you know, stepping up to be more assertive or something like that. It was called Lean In. It's become like a popular book. Like I say, I didn't read the book, but I saw it sitting there when I was getting off a plane 5 years ago. I was walking through the seat. You know, someone had it on their tray, Lean In, and I thought, yes, that's a good idea, Lean In. In fact, Upanishad means to lean in. You sit up close, really get into it. And in fact, it's described how when Vidura was listening to Krishna and he was sitting there, he was in a very specific, he was leaning in. It's described in the verse itself. He had one arm down on his knee like this, and he had his ear like this. This is called leaning in. So that's what we have to do in order to remove the doubts. In order to, and when we remove the doubts, we'll be able to advance in devotional service. And that brings us to the end of our sangha for today. You're like the sages of, well, Naimasaranya. But, you know, just seeing everybody assembled here and having time to read Bhagavatam, read and discuss Bhagavatam together is a sign of following the parampara and By doing that, one can recover spiritual health very quickly. Om Tat Sat. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki. Gaur Premanande. Nitai Gaura Haribo. 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 Nitai Gaura Haribo. Nitai Gaura Haribo. Bo. Haribo. Nitai Gaura Haribo. Okay, I just went in choir, you know, when you go like this, you stop all at the same time, and there's a very profound effect you'll see. So don't, everyone stop exactly at the same time, and you'll see what I mean. Are you ready?
Yes.
Try it one more time. Gaur Premanande, Nitai Gaura Haribo, Haribo. Haribo, Nitai Gaura Haribo, Nitai Gaura Haribo, Bo. Haribo, Nitai Gaura Haribo. Better, better.
Natari Armarman. Natari Armarman. Natari Armarman. Hey, Natari Armarman. Natari Armarman. Natari Armarman. Natari Armarman.